Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Oh, I know what you mean. My boyfriend won't wash my dildos after I use them. I mean, what's that all about? Yeah, I was talking about you.
That is an outright lie.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, and good night. Because this is a podcast, you can listen to it anytime you like. It's that convenient. And welcome to episode number 13A of the Cubby House Podcast.
This is where we show you all the things that we didn't get to package in our last show.
There was so much that I couldn't cram it into the one episode, so we just had to release another one.
Yes, and we can thank our guest Mike for that particular session. In this particular sideshow, we have our representation of the bear community part two. All the parts that we didn't get to cover last episode.
Yeah, I had to cut that conversation in half, unfortunately, in the last episode. But now it's here in its entirety, and it was good.
We also have an etiquette section.
And the topic is...
Is it PC to correct somebody on their terms of partners and pre-assumptions in regards to partners?
Okay, also we have another script by Jay Neal that Cookie, Ryan, Mike and I have performed, and hopefully it'll be good. It's a bit on the saucy side, if I might add.
And as always, seeing as we haven't been on air for a little bit, we have a few more shout-outs for all the people who have gotten back to us from our previous podcasts. Thank you very much, and we'll get to you in due time. But for now, stay tuned for a tale of Prince Orsino.
You are listening to A Bedtime Story. You can read along with me in your book. You will know when it's time to turn the page when you hear the chime ring like this. Let's begin now. Come over here. Lie down so that I can groom your fur.
That's good. Now tell me a story.
What kind of story?
Bedtime story, of course.
Once upon a time, far, far... Ow!
No, not that kind of story. A proper bedtime story.
Far, far away, there lived a handsome prince at the edge of an enchanted forest.
Was he a bear?
He certainly was. A big, beautiful prince with a big, beautiful brown beard and a big, beautiful belly all covered with fur. You see, he lived in an ancient time where all the beautiful and important people were husky and hairy.
What was his name?
His name was Orsino. Now, Prince Orsino was a good prince, much beloved by his subjects. He had the most beautiful smile too, and whenever he smiled, the sun would shine all day long and the people would be happy and dance merrily. But lately, the villagers had begun to worry. Prince Orsino had not smiled in many, many months. He just moped around his castle all the time, looking sad. Because of this, it had been cloudy and rainy every day for many, many months, and the people were getting tired of it. Since it meant that instead of spending their time dancing merrily, they had to stay inside and do paperwork. They started gathering in the rain outside the castle to shake their heads at the sad spectacle and whisper about their situation. Soon there were so many people gathered that their whispering grew very loud, and Prince Orsino came out to the portcullis to see what was going on. When they saw him, the people cried out,
"Oh, most beloved Prince Orsino, why are you so sad all the time? Please smile so that the sun will shine and we can dance merrily instead of having to do this paperwork crap."
The prince addressed his people.
"People, although I love each of you with all my heart, I cannot smile, for I am very sad."
The people nodded their heads and made sympathetic noises.
"As you know,"
the prince continued,
"I am one of an age where the people of our land take a mate to live with them and work at their side. Alas, I have found no mate with whom I might form a loving relationship, and because of this, I am sad."
After the prince went back inside out of the rain, the people discuss this turn of events. They convince themselves that the problem with their prince was basically a lack of sex. So they came up with a plan to correct that. Certain that there would be sunshine the next day, they slept peacefully, despite the sound of heavy rain on their cottage roofs. The next morning, the village cooper arrived at the castle with his older son John and knocked at the portcullis. When the prince appeared, Mr. Cooper presented his son.
Beloved prince, this is my oldest son, John. As you can see, he is a healthy, robust boy with a broad, hairy chest and strong, muscled arms from working the iron bands for our barrels. Beneath his full black beard, he has most of his teeth, but his mouth is large enough that they don't scrape. Aye, as in any the village will tell ye, John here is his father's pride and the best cocksucker for many days' walk. Sire, accept his willingness to serve ye. Enjoy his welcoming mouth and skillful tongue, so that the sun might shine again.
Prince Orsino was touched by Mr. Cooper's gesture, and on behalf of the village, he felt sure that John Cooper's talent would not lift the cloud casting its shadow over his heart. But the young man was attractive, and a good blowjob couldn't hurt anything, so he welcomed the young Cooper into the castle. John Cooper was eager to please, and in no time he had taken off his homespun clothes and stood naked before the prince. Orsino ran his hands over the Cooper's thick arm muscles and down his broad hairy chest. He was about to admire Cooper's large balls and already stiff dick, but before he had a chance, Cooper had removed the prince's codpiece and buried his bearded face in the prince's crotch. Cooper's talented tongue, wet lips, and warm, receptive mouth entertained the prince's dick while his beard tickled and caressed the prince's balls. Orsino succumbed to Cooper's ministrations, drawn along by the sight, sound, and sensation of the tongue bath his dick was receiving. Cooper held on tightly to Orsino's butt and increased the pace of his oral therapy. Soon, the prince felt a rising urgency within him, and he exploded into a gushing climax. Some moments passed when he was able to breathe again and collect his thoughts. Orsino looked down at John Cooper's smiling face. As Mr. Cooper had promised, the young man was a very talented cocksucker. Indeed, this was the best blowjob the prince had ever had. But still, his heart was heavy. His lasting happiness was not to be found here. He was grateful and thanked young Cooper for his sincere efforts, but regretfully sent him home. The entire village was disappointed to see John Cooper return among them. He related his tale, and the villagers all agreed that he had given the best blowjob ever. But still, the problem remained. Oh, what to do? Many of the villagers stayed up all night trying to think of something that might cause the prince to smile again. The next morning, the village miller arrived at the castle with his twin sons and knocked at the portcullis. When the prince appeared, Mr. Miller presented them.
Beloved prince, these are my two sons, good men both. As ye can see, they are finely furred with beautiful asses that they get from working with the milling stones. Please overlook the misfortune of being born twins with identical appearance. Unfortunately, both have fiery red hair from the top of their heads to their very toes. But this does not prevent their having the finest assholes for fucking in the entire village! Sire, accept their willingness to serve you. Enjoy their asses, so that the sun may shine again!
Prince Orsino was touched by Mr. Miller's gesture. On behalf of the village, it still seemed unlikely that the Miller twins could lift his heart's burden. But they did have the most beautifully shaped asses, and a good fuck couldn't hurt anything, so he welcomed them into the castle. The Miller twins were very eager to please, and in no time had removed each other's clothing and stood naked before the prince. Orsino admired their firm, round asses and agreed with Mr. Miller that the fiery red hair covering every part of their bodies was no detriment. Orsino was about to express his appreciation for their rigidly identical dicks when he found his codpiece removed, and the Miller twins bending over before him presenting their hairy, hidden treasures for him to plunder. Momentarily burdened by feelings of noblesse oblige, the prince was nevertheless aroused by the inviting sight before him, and his dick grew hard. He slowly pushed it into the asshole of the first twin and enjoyed the warm, firm stimulation as he moved in and out. After a few minutes, he turned his attention to the asshole of the second twin and was a bit surprised that the Miller twins felt as identical on the inside as they looked on the outside. While he worked the asshole of one twin with his dick, he worked the asshole of the other with his finger, so they might enjoy the experience equally. As he increased the pace of his fucking, both twins seemed to breathe faster and moan louder, all the while pushing their asses to meet his increasingly rapid thrusts. It wasn't much longer before Osino felt the irrepressible rising urgency within him, and his explosive climax was met with the loud grunts and simultaneous ejaculations from the militants. After he was able to breathe again and collect his thoughts, Orsino looked with melancholy at the red-furred asses of the twins and pulled both men up to face him. As Mr. Miller had promised, they were remarkable fucks, undoubtedly the best in the village, despite their being twins. And yet, the prince's heart felt empty and cold. He knew that his true and lasting happiness lay elsewhere. He was grateful for the Miller twins, and he thanked them for their sincere efforts and then sent them home.
I must be the prince in this story. I'm husky, I'm hairy, and I get to fuck all the men in the village, right?
Yeah, we'll see about that. Anyway, since the village had high hopes for the Miller twins, they were undoubtedly disappointed to see the twins return. The twins told the tale, and all agreed that they had given the prince the best fuck ever. But still, it rained. The people were starting to feel desperate, for they were running out of ideas to try. They thought, and thought, and thought, and still, it rained. So it was 3 days past when the Miller twins arrived at the castle with their father, the Miller, and knocked at the portcullis. When the prince appeared, the Miller twins presented their father to him.
Beloved prince, this is our father, a loyal servant of yours despite his deviant sexual desires. Although he is now aged beyond 40 years and his beard and hair have mostly turned white, he remains the kinkiest man in the village. Sire, please accept our father's willingness to serve you. Tie him up, whip him, piss on him, pierce his skin, and perform unspeakable acts with his naked body so that the sun may shine again.
Prince Orsino was touched by the Miller twins' gesture on behalf of their village, but he was beginning to feel that enough might be enough. He felt certain that Mr. Miller's total submission wouldn't do much to lift his own spirits. However, since the silvery hair that seemed to cover Mr. Miller's entire body aroused his curiosity, he welcomed him into the castle. He called for servants to take Mr. Miller to the dungeon where they were to chain him up, naked, to its damp, cold, stone walls. The prince was about to change into his leathers and fetch his whip, when he suddenly overcame by wariness at the futility of his search for a companion. Although he felt guilty at neglecting his responsibilities, he called again for his servants and instructed them to go to Mr. Miller in the dungeon, to whip him, piss on him, pierce his skin, and perform unspeakable acts upon his naked hairy body. Meanwhile, the prince might go for a walk in the enchanted forest and consider his plight. The prince walked and walked, lost in thought, when he encountered a one-armed woodcutter in a clearing cutting wood. The woodcutter was big and husky, with bulging muscles from a lifetime of cutting wood, and like the wild man he was, he had long, wild hair and a long, wild beard, and his whole body was covered with hair, and he had an enormous dick.
How could you tell how big his dick was?
Because it was an enchanted forest and he was completely naked. So anyway, the woodcutter worked, swinging his axe, while his enormous rock-hard dick and equally enormous balls swung in rhythm. This attracted the attention of the prince, who stopped to talk.
Greetings, naked hairy woodcutter. How goes your work?
The woodcutter paused and leaned on his axe.
The woodcutting goes well enough for such a pointless activity, but it never stops raining and my mood is as gloomy as the weather, because I can't give myself a proper hand job with just one arm.
The prince asked how he lost his arm, and the woodcutter answered,
I once met a creature who asked a riddle I could not answer. What walks on 3 legs in its youth, 4 legs in its maturity, and 2 legs in its old age?
After a bit of thought, Osino agreed that it was indeed a difficult riddle. Then he turned to walk away. The woodcutter yelled,
Halt!
And raised high his axe.
Now that you have heard the riddle, you must answer it or forfeit your head to a deft swing of my axe, unless you'd rather give me a blowjob.
The prince considered his options, first looking at the woodcutter's enormous axe, then at the woodcutter's enormous dick. He dropped to his knees, grabbed the hard dick in front of his face, and held it up against the man's hairy belly, so that he might admire the beautiful pair of balls in front of his nose. Then he licked and sucked with delight until the woodcutter began to squirm. Unable to subdue his appetite any longer, Orsino began licking and sucking the woodcutter's dick with frenzied abandon. Just then, while Orsino was fully absorbed in cocksucking and the woodcutter was distracted by his approaching orgasm, a knight rode into the clearing on his giant stallion. Sir Butch, for that was his name, wore strange armour that resembled leather chaps, a harness, and a studded leather codpiece. When he recognised the figure of the prince, he became indignant at the degradation that Orsino had been forced to suffer. In his fury, Sir Butch drew his sword and with one stroke sliced off the woodcutter's head, just as the woodcutter began to shoot cum all over Orsino's face. Surprised at this development, the prince looked up at the knight.
Good knight, I thank you for your assistance in my time of need, but whence your haste? Now I shall never know the answer to the woodcutter's riddle.
The knight dismounted and bowed before the prince.
Good prince, I am Sir Butch, of the neighbouring realm. I chanced upon your dreadful predicament, and seeing the humiliation you were forced to suffer, I was filled with rage and determined to punish the woodcutter on the spot.
Orsino stood back and looked at the knight over with growing interest. Certainly, the leather armour was appealing, and the way that Sir's chest hair poked out around his harness was provocative. A thought came to mind.
Sir Butch, I appreciate your candour and your bravery, and I find your aspect most pleasant to look upon, particularly the chest hair that pokes out around your harness. I, myself, am looking for a mate to share my life. Are you already spoken for?
Looking upon the prince's big, beautiful brown beard and big, beautiful belly, undoubtedly all covered with fur, the knight wanted to accept, but he couldn't.
Alas, my prince, it cannot be. I am strictly a top, and since you are a prince, and therefore could not be a bottom, we would face a lifetime of frustration.
The look of confusion on Orsino's face masked his deep disappointment.
I do not see an obstacle. Pray, sir, what is this top and bottom you speak of?
Sir Butch was startled by this deficit in the prince's knowledge.
When I make love with the man of my choice, I put my dick in his mouth for him to suck, and into his asshole for me to fuck. I am the top, and he is the bottom.
The prince reflected on the knight's words, and saw a glimmer of hope. He explained to Sir that already he was forced to suck the woodcutter's cock, and he had rather enjoyed it. Only, he didn't smile because he feared for his life. He went on to suggest that the thought of him being fucked by Sir Butch was starting to arouse him. Sir Butch gracefully accepted Prince Orsino's invitation. They searched until they found a dry spot under a tree where Sir lovingly removed the prince's clothing and admired his big, beautiful belly, which was indeed covered with fur. They fell into each other's arms and kissed with an intensity that neither had ever known. After some time, Orsino removed Sir's studded codpiece and felt a great happiness at the sight, which he expressed by drawing Sir's dick completely into his mouth and swallowing it, to the evident delight of the knight. The prince continued his own enjoyment, and he noticed that Sir was perilously close to climax. Orsino looked into Butcher's eyes, and the knight understood that the time had come to fuck the prince. Being a very tender lover, Sir Butch laid him on his back onto the ground, wet his fingers, and inserted first one, then two fingers into Orsino's willing but tight asshole. For more than an hour, he loosened the prince, whose moans grew louder and whose cocks grew harder with each thrust. When he judged that the time was right, Sir Butch withdrew his fingers and inserted his dick into the prince's receptive asshole. To the tune of Orsino's ever louder cries of delight and encouragement, Sir's initially measured thrust gave way to their mounting passion. Time stopped until Sir noticed that he was again approaching his climax. Sir moved his face down to kiss the prince, and just as he came in great waves inside the prince, Orsino himself experienced an orgasm unlike he had ever experienced. As they lay heaving for breath with bodies entwined, Prince Orsino felt an unknown lightness in his soul and contentment in his heart, and he smiled with overwhelming joy to realize his destiny is a bottom with Sir Butch, his top. Noticing that the rain suddenly stopped, he looked up and saw the sun break through the clouds. Prince Orsino took Sir Butch's hand and they walked back to the castle, slowed in their progress by frequent stops for kissing. As the sun was beginning to set, they emerged from the enchanted forest and were greeted by the people of the village, dancing and cheering and throwing paperwork into the air. Acknowledging his faithful people, Prince Orsino waved and smiled his beautiful smile, then introduced Sir Butch, his new mate. As the cheering resumed, the prince led his knight to the castle, where they lived together and came happily ever after.
Wait a minute. What was the answer to the riddle? Are you saying that the prince was really a bottom all the time?
Roll over, my prince, and let's start finding out.
Wow, chicka, wow, wow.
Woo!
That story was so hot, I think I'm a little bit wet. You can thank Jay Neal for that particular short story. He sent it into a podcast at thecubbyhouse.net.au. And you can send in your short stories as well, or anything else at that rate, because that's the kind of podcast that we are. Now,
while you go get freshened up, let's get on to our second half of the representation of the bear community discussion.
Oh, I'm excited and not clean. Now, I've brought in a whole series of books into the Dungeon Studios today, and one of them is More Bear Cooking by PJ Gray. So, presumably, this is a book full of recipes that will appeal to bears, and most of them are rather wholesome and fatty.
So it's a masculine Two Fat Ladies cookbook, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, so it's nothing like Martha Stewart's latest release.
But you've also got some other academic texts. I've also brought in The Bear Book by Les Wright and Bears on Bears by Ron Jackson Serratia. The point that I was wanting to make is that in mainstream, at least queer film, bears are represented in a particular way. I'd like to point references to three different films. One of them is Bear Cub, the Spanish film. The second being A Dirty Shame, the John Waters film. And the third one being another gay movie, which are the three films that come to mind when I'm thinking about representations of bear culture. And I'm kind of wondering, are they accurate?
Well, for those playing at home, how are they portrayed in the films?
Another gay movie is the only one I still admit to having seen out of the three.
It's okay, Bear Cub's the only one.
Wait till you see the sequel.
Sorry?
Wait till you see the sequel.
I have.
Oh, worse. God, really? Ugh.
Another gay movie portrays it as, it was just basically a porn star, a bear, went to bed with one of these other guys, never ended up happening because of complications, but it was just about this guy, he's hairy, he's furry, he's built, wolf.
No, it wasn't just that, it was a softball scene as well, how you've got the twinks versus the bad news bears. So that's another gay movie.
I think with the another gay movie thing though, it's also, he was just an object of lust. How often do you see bears being presented as an object of lust in queer cinema, especially an object of lust for that type of character? The very, very queeny, very skinny, very effeminate kind of character. They're not what you would classically see tied to a bear. Do you want to do another gay movie?
I don't really think there's an awful lot to be said about another gay movie, really, other than the fact that for the brief moments in the film when bears were present, they were pretty much in leather and they were big and they didn't actually say anything. So there's not an awful lot to be said. And I'm not too familiar about the politics of queer baseball, so I'll leave that one to rest.
I think I've only seen it in two films, that and Broken Hearts Club.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they were both porn films.
No.
Anyway, A Dirty Shame. What representation is there in that?
Well, A Dirty Shame is a film by John Waters, which is pretty much the showcasing extravaganza of people's various fetishes, as long as they are safe and consensual and don't hurt anyone. And pretty much there were three bears and a lot of others that don't get so much screen time. You've got Mama Bear, Papa Bear, and Baby Bear, which own their own den. They have bear soup parties and they woof at people who drive past on the street. But in the context of the film, a bear identity is considered somewhat of a fetish in the context of a sexual attraction to dirt, pouring food into your tits and cunnilingus.
But I mean, that's John Waters' representation. And you can do a little search on YouTube, people. And I remember John Waters talking about bears. And he said, when saying that you're a bear, it's like a second coming out. So that could be just like a bit of a tainted light on the bear community. It's purely for entertainment reasons. He wasn't actually being serious about it.
It was also a caricature. I mean, it was every fetish that's presented in A Dirty Shame pretty much is presented as a quick sketch of the extremes of the fetish. Because they're doing it for humour. And they're doing it for gross out in some cases. So when you see the bears, although I do know bears who say woof every other sentence, most of them don't do that.
And finally, Bear Cub.
Well, I was just about to add, in the context of what you were just saying, how in the major bonds between bears are physical, as in slot A and slot B. Do you still mind not touching each other? You're distracting.
He's touching me.
He started it.
I did. Mom!
Oh, God.
Yes, Mike?
Ah, Dad!
Okay.
So, if that is to be believed, then What is to say that being identified as a bear is any different than, say, than any other fetish, really?
Well, technically, it's not a fetish, unless you need it to get off, in the proper use of the term fetish, not the general use of the term fetish. Do you think it would be fetish? I mean, compare that to, say, leather as a fetish.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's...
Fetish for...
Cookie, help.
Fetish for body type, yes. But I think, again, fetish is only a means to an end.
Hmm.
So,
but it's kind of like the same thing of saying a guy's only attracted to Asians, for example. That's not really a fetish. It's just what he's attracted to.
It's a preference.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like people prefer to open a can of Heinz baked beans and pour it down their top for sexual arousal.
That would be a specific fetish.
I think that's just you.
My secret is out.
And thank you,
Ryan.
And another one, for those of us who watched Queer as Folk, how many bears did we see on Queer as Folk?
I remember seeing one in, like, the very first episode.
I remember seeing a fat guy in leather in one of the episodes in the diner, sitting in the back, making no noise. But I don't remember ever seeing an active character in the entire series. And people can, like, email them and tell me to shut up because I'm wrong here. But I don't remember ever seeing a bear guy.
I remember a leather couple, like a bear leather couple. And Brian brought them to Mel and Lindsay's house to talk about China patterns for when they were getting married.
But then again, just quickly on that, the fact that you didn't see any bears in Queer as Folk as main characters, yet you saw them as side characters, like in the general audience.
Or extras.
They were extras.
Would that not be also relevant to the storyline in saying that they weren't part of the main character's interaction preference?
Well, it's the fact that the main character's interactions were in a very small group. It's the same. I mean, I've heard some people go, where are all the black people in Queer as Folk? There weren't that many.
No. So it brings out general storylines in Queer as Folk, but it wasn't... specifically relevant.
They were shown occasionally in the background, but you were never introduced to them as being a worthwhile person.
There was a comic book shop there. There should have been cubs in that comic book
shop. Hell
yes,
there should have been geeky cubs.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, I think Bear's got more representation in the L word than Queer as Folk. I mean, I haven't watched the L word. Heavens no, lesbians.
That show rocks.
I retract that statement because I know that at least my former lecturer at uni played scenes from the L word in lectures.
Which I totally missed, which was so unfair.
So there's not really much point. It's only that they're both made by Showtime. And the last one, Bear Cub, how it's pretty much the basis of the entire film. How it's all set in Madrid and it's all about masculinity and responsibility. And although it's based around the bear community, it's more about the personal profiles of the people involved, that there might have been a party scene where it's all very friendly, it's all very chummy, it's all very Madrid. And I'm just kind of wondering, is that a more accurate representation?
I, for once, can't comment because I've never seen the damn movie.
Well, it looks like it's just you and I, Jack, talking about this one.
From your analogies or from what I've heard, yes. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that being a bear is not about a set thing that we all see on show A or show B, but it is merely an element of somebody's life and their identity and how they go about their lives.
You haven't seen the film, but that's pretty much the most insightful thing that probably could have been said.
Mm.
My God, this is what you've told me, so go figure.
Well, I think that, like, I mean, it does shine lights on people, on certain traits that people aren't really fond of, but unfortunately they happen. For example, the main character is HIV positive. He is also promiscuous. He takes drugs. He goes to beats. So, I mean, these are certain things that, like, people have done, but a lot of people were like, oh, but we're not all like that, so it's bad. We should shun the homosexuality.
Instead of shunning the people that, you know, you see one representation, oh, hey, that's what everyone's like.
Well, exactly right. Probably the best representation, I think, that you could probably take away from the film is that we can look after a kid and it will be okay. I mean, there's other representations in it that you could take away and be like, yay, this is lovely, this is gooey, you know.
So the kid doesn't blow up?
No, that's the sequel.
So I suppose the question in conclusion that begs to be asked is that in the context of queer cinema in queer press, either bears unrepresented, misrepresented, are they just right in proportion to the space that they occupy?
Underrepresented in comparison to the myriad movies put out by different queer cinema showing young and twinky and muscly in all these different forms. we rarely see films about bears or guys who aren't attractive. Even the unattractive till he takes his glasses off. We rarely ever see movies about bear guys, cub guys, anything beyond that basic mainstream attractive young male. For the male gay movies, obviously.
In conclusion, no, I don't think we're given a fair cop-out. So maybe we could band together and write our own movie.
My two cents is the fact that if the bear community is still as young as people say it is in comparison to all these other communities, and the fact that we haven't had a lot of representation so far in media in the form of film and TV, just means there's more opportunity for more things to come along.
But I tell you...
That's very silver lining of you, Cookie.
But I tell you one part... one format that the bear community is not misrepresented or unrepresented. Unrepresented.
Underrepresented.
Underrepresented.
Yay.
Is the podcast. There are lots of bear podcasts out there.
A fair bit of porn too.
A fair bit of porn as well. I would like to say ahoy to everyone who makes a bear podcast. There seems to be one coming out of every city now, and we're competing against you for people's valuable ears.
Aren't there like two here now?
That we know of.
Is there another podcast in Melbourne?
In Australia.
Oh, I thought you meant in Melbourne.
How rude, you can't do that.
Thank you, dear. That is such a wonderful thought.
Etiquette. Do we flag somebody if they have said something that is politically incorrect? First example is quite common for any gay guy in a workplace, and they get asked, and how is your girlfriend doing in this particular situation? Do we correct them and say, well, my partner, my boyfriend, or just say their name, is doing fine, thank you, etc.?
I think most people would just use the word partner to sort of meet them halfway, to say, yes, okay, I'm not disagreeing with you that I have a girlfriend and I'm not coming out, but I'm also being true to myself by not going along with the lie that I'm straight. I mean, I myself don't give a shit what people think, so I would say, no, I suck cock, my boyfriend, blah, but that's just me.
I think people tend to be polite when it comes to this kind of thing, that they're not out to get you necessarily, and maybe a subtle reminder is enough, but don't go over the top, because then you'll make them feel like assholes, and you've already got an asshole. So
one's enough in this case.
You don't need another one.
Well, so. What if you're a top? You might want another asshole to do stuff with.
Or more than one asshole.
Mm. Well, Mr. It's an option. There you go, see?
Well, that's a topic for like 20 minutes ago.
That's underestimating.
So, I think that the etiquette is about making people feel important, making people feel as though they're not belittled or invalid. So, just being discreet in the situation is the key.
Mike?
Well, I make the assumption that people think I'm gay, because if you know me for more than 5 minutes, you're not deaf, dumb, and blind. Hi. I assume that you think I'm talking about my partner as a male, and I will correct you. I'll say my boyfriend. I'll say Kevin. Hi, Kevin. I will point out politely that I'm a cocksucker if the need be.
But this is personal preference. This is like what I said. I would do that. You would do that. Is it PC to do that, though?
Is it politically correct to turn around to someone and correct them on the fact that you're gay? Well, if you're out, yes. If you're not out, then I'm assuming you wouldn't want to. But I think it's, whether politically correct or not, it's correct to correct someone that you're referring to me as a heterosexual when I'm not. And you might want to, you know, clear up that misunderstanding.
Otherwise, you might be set up with Jane from accounting, and that would have hilarious consequences.
I actually have a very funny story to talk about that. One of the women that I work with tried to set me up with a girl at work, not knowing that she's a lesbian and that I'm gay. So we made a little running joke saying, yeah, you can totally set us up, but, you know, there'll be extramarital activities on the side.
What a twist.
Mm. Cookie? So, what about yourself? Do you think it's...
Well, I would agree with Mike, because I'm actually in dual roles. I'm out to some, I'm not out, or not knowingly out to others. So if I know it's somebody who I've already come out to, like I have made quite clear that I am a flamer.
What are they, headless?
Yeah.
Probably still got...
They live in a small box.
Under a rock.
When you walk into a new job, it's like, hey, did you notice that 3-foot dildo hanging out? Oh, I'm sorry.
Awkward. Yeah.
Exactly. No, I will correct somebody if I'm knowingly out to them, or I'm comfortable being out to them. But if it's somebody who I deal with purely on a professional basis, who I don't really want to commit too much information with, I will go along with it, because in that particular case, I'm securing my own security of communication with them on the level that we are on, being professional, and that's where I want to keep it.
Yeah.
And that's where I find that the PC is. Where you consider your level of communication, whether you're happy to open up and be a bit more personal about yourself, or whether you strictly want to keep it to work is work, personal is personal.
At a certain point, it's none of their damn business.
Exactly. So that's why I will play both roles, depending on the situation.
It reminds me of, has everyone here seen the movie Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Nope.
Were you born then? No.
Excuse me. I haven't seen it, but I understand the concept.
Okay. There was a scene where an older woman asks a younger woman, you know, oh, so are you married? And she says, no. She goes, oh, so are you a lesbian? She goes, oh, what makes you say that? It's like, oh, well, you know, it's better than asking, so you haven't met the right man yet. So is that a better option, to assume that if someone is single, they must possibly be gay?
Depends if they're cute.
Okay.
Well, look... I have to draw
a slut.
Like, I'm hopeful.
I have to draw an experience of yes and no. In the modern day, I think being a bit more acceptable of people being gay and being out, it is probably, again, a point of wit and a point of humour to take that angle. However, you got to be prepared for the backfire in saying that you're completely wrong. And again, it's that degree of communication. Do you want to be taking a witty level of communication? Do you want to be keeping it fairly plain and simple and easy, shall we say? And that's where I think, again, it's a judgment call as to how you want to try and communicate with somebody.
So when you're starting at a new job, what level of openness is most appropriate? I mean, you're starting a new job at a call center, hypothetically, and you could burst in through the door with your glimmering, shiny Elton John outfit, your giant diamond-encrusted glasses, and a boombox playing Kylie, and you can introduce yourself like this. I'm holding out my hand to Cookie. Hi, I'm Jack. I'm a fag. Hi.
Charmed. Enchanté.
I'm Jack. I suck cock.
We know, dear. We saw XTube.
Hi. I'm so into you.
Well, I take on the point, like, I used to work in a smash repair shop. You know, I used to work in air conditioning. And even now, I work around tradespeople. All my jobs that I've ever had, other than hospitality, I've worked around butch people. So I've always gone on the fact that I don't come out because my sexuality is not my entire life. I also love to read. I also love to play games. I also love to travel and camp and shoot and watch horror movies. So, I mean, does that make... So, if I like to shoot...
I'm thinking that that's pretty much like your video dating
profile.
Well,
exactly.
I like long walks in the park and... Yeah.
And field dressing mooses, apparently.
What?
Shooting.
I like shooting.
Uh-huh.
Boom, boom.
I'm sorry for anything I ever did to you.
Yeah, I'll meet you at your university. I'll be the one in the clock tower with the balaclava.
Oh, God.
But I mean, like, going back to what I was saying, it's just a small part of me. So, therefore, I wouldn't say anything because it's not really necessary. I mean, if people were wandering about and going, ah, me missus is giving me trouble, or, oh, my kids are pissing me off, or whatever, that's their thing. I wouldn't go up to them, oh, I know what you mean. My boyfriend won't wash my dildos after I use them. I mean, what's that all about? You know, it's just one of those things that... But the fact of the matter is, like, I think it's probably just your own personal call. If you feel comfortable enough to come out to people, then do it.
I will tag you on that one in saying that I am a tradesman. I'm in that role. What I find with that similar situation is, by coming out as a screaming queen, when they haven't even met you, they will automatically judge you because you're making yourself an object of attention. Whereas if you, first of all, get to know them for who you are, besides being gay, then turning around eventually saying, yes, I'm gay, they are more likely to be comfortable with that because they've gotten to know you. They know you're not going to hit on them or anything. So it's a bit more comforting in that respect. Going to the automatic saying of, you walk in, hi, I'm gay. Well, you've already started turning backs up before you've got your foot in the door, basically.
Yeah.
And you're getting somebody offside.
Well, it depends what their assumption of gay is. I mean, I totally agree with you. The amount of times I've come out to tradespeople, for example, and they've said, oh, no, you're okay because you're not like Queenie and you're not one of them. Sort of thing.
One of them.
Well, that's exactly right.
You know, one of the feminine gays.
Well, yeah.
The evil ones.
To gays. That's with a Z.
I think there's another consideration in that as well. I used to be a youth worker. I worked in refuges for young adults who couldn't stay at home. And I had to be aware that there was a possibility there could be young queer kids at these refuges as well. and I never tried to hide my sexuality from them. But frankly, it doesn't come into that role because I'm there to make sure you don't off yourself. I'm not there to share what my boyfriend did to me last night. It would be inappropriate in that role. But at the same time, if a kid ever turned around and said, "Are you gay?" I don't want to be the gay man that teaches them it's shameful by saying, "No, no, I'm not." So I would always say, "Yes, I am," if I was asked, but I would never present it to them. Part of that's also showing them that there's more than one type of gay person, that there's more than just the stereotype.
Yes.
How about yourself, Jack? Are you going to come out in your usual uniform of Elton John sunglasses and Kylie playing boombox?
And furry tail.
Well, the furry tail's a different thing, but no.
I saw you bouncing through my lecture hall.
That's right. And it was quite a show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But that was Furry Appreciation Day, wasn't it, if I'm not mistaken?
It was end of semester day.
Okay. Well, so. Okay.
It was Let's Revise for Our Exams, Ladies and Gentlemen Day.
Yeah. I burst into a lecture theatre on the last day of classes in a furry costume. Pretty much I painted my face like a dog. I put myself in with the... I wore a pair of pants with an orange tail hanging out of it and ripped up clothes and skull and crossbones on the shirt, and I serenaded the lecturer and gave her a rose, and I presented her with a copy of A Dog's Life, the magazine.
Wow.
And I sung that song.
And I hid in the back row of the lecture theatre. I don't know him. No one. I'm not here.
But going back to what you were just saying, there are a couple of responses that we kind of receive. And one of them is like, "I know a gay person now. Isn't that great? You could do my nails and we can go shopping." And it's like, yeah, that's what you got girlfriends for. Now scat.
And not that kind of scat.
Do we need to clarify that every time I say scat?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Beep, ba, 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 dum, bum. And there's the other one that's like...
It's funny because you're lame.
What a shame. You're attractive. You're open about yourself. You're open about your sexuality. And, oh, if only you were heterosexual. It's like, yeah, you're missing out, babe.
Moving on.
Maybe in Bizarro World, where there's hetero Jack.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. I fucking hope that's never going
to
happen.
And that goes back to the conversation we had a couple of podcasts ago about, would you fuck a Bizarro version of yourself?
No.
And the question is, he's heterosexual.
Yes. You would. And so, yeah, I know.
I'm good. Why would I not?
God, I'm bitchy enough. Why would there want to be two of me? I'd kill myself.
Yeah, well, you're different.
Yeah.
I'm pretty.
I'm pretty too.
Mm-hmm. You're both pretty.
Yeah, we are.
So, clearing the PC, one word, would we correct somebody if they assumed we were heterosexual and asked about our potential girlfriend, Jack?
If it was appropriate to do so.
Mike. Typically, yes.
I always would, unless I sensed that I was going to get my head kicked in. Otherwise, I would be like, yeah, totally, I love her pussy.
Yeah, okay. For me, if the context is appropriate... Come one, come all. To those who have emailed, contacted us through Skype or Facebook, thank you very much. We appreciate all your correspondence. And we would just like to make mention of a few this week. First of all,
Kendall from Buffalo in the United States. I am so excited because as far as names in the bear community goes, that is a big one. Also, I've been in talks with the writer Wayne Hoffman, who wrote the book Hard in 2005 and also a contributor for A Bear's Life magazine. So he might be contributing a short story to the podcast in a future episode.
And just while we're on people who have contributed, thank you very much to Jay Neal once more for the latest show skit that we've done. And to our essay writer all the way in the UK, thank you very much, Paul, once again for continuing your effortless essays of emails. You quickly mentioned you wanted Jack to be waxed for his punishment for square rooting. Well, unfortunately, we've kind of come to an agreement. We're not going to be waxing anybody in the near future, but we will have something pre-prepared ready for next show.
Well, it's not too late to send in your submissions for punishment for episode number 14, so send those in.
Yeah.
Why am I addressing this issue? I shouldn't be.
Perhaps not. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Will, who's Rugby68 on BearDubDubDub. He's sent me a couple of messages privately. Thank you very much. We do appreciate that you do really give us a big ego boost with such messages.
Aww.
And finally, it's not to exclude other podcasts. We are in correspondence with a couple around the globe. One is our own very local boys, those Bears in the City, who I thank a lot. Although I didn't get to catch up with them, they quite happily opened to the idea of me coming on their podcast. Unfortunately, 4 out of the 5 of them are shift workers, so they couldn't exactly tee up properly. But thank you very much, and I hope you have a wonderful more 50 shows to come. We'd also like to say a big shout out, as always, to the boys of the Cubs Out Loud podcast. That is Jeff, John, Tim, and on occasion, Keith. They do a wonderful job doing a podcast every week. Although they're in the same city, they use the tool Skype rather than transportation. So if you'd like to listen to them, it's COL or CubsOutLoud.com, and the Bears in the City is bearsinthecity.com.au. Thank you very much to listening to us once again, and hope to catch you for future episodes. This is Cookie.
And this is Jack, and not Ryan. Ryan's not here.
No.
He'll be back for episode 14.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank Mike, last of all, because he has contributed to the show in such a way that it required 2 whole episodes. That's big.
Yeah, just to go and match his heart. If you'd like to get hold of us, the contact points is podcast@thecubbyhouse.net.au.
Or you can call the Cubby line at 9005-PLAY, that is in Melbourne.
If you are on Facebook, we are The Cubby House, and our group is The Cubby House Horde. And if you'd also like to catch us on our website, it is thecubbyhouse.net.au. Catch you next week. Cubby House was made in conjunction with Joy 94.9. For more podcasts, check out joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.